There's something missing this year from the fall scenery in the Northeast, especially in upstate New York. The state's normally a top pumpkin producer, but about a third of its pumpkin crop was destroyed in the recent tropical storms. Marie Cusick of member station WMHT in Albany takes us to one farm that was spared.
There's no shortage of pumpkins at the Black Horse Farm's roadside stand in Athens, New York, but some customers still aren't taking any chances.
I was worried about getting a pumpkin, and I figured I'll get mine here since I'm here.
1628.
Karen DeSico heard about pumpkin shortages, so she's happy to snag an extra large one here and happy to pay less than she would have at home in New York City.
Looks like a perfect pumpkin, $10, perfect. Can drive it home and not have to deal with it when I get back to Queens.
Although fall has just begun, demand for pumpkins has been steadier than usual, says Chelly Appa, who manages her family's farm stand.
I believe they're buying pumpkins earlier because I think they're afraid there won't be any.
Black Horse Farms is nestled in the Hudson River Valley along the northern edge of the Catskill Mountains. It was spared much of the flooding from tropical storms Irene and Lee that devastated other parts of the region. Appa says she's grateful.
Oh, we feel so blessed, and we feel so horrible for those poor people that have been so destroyed by the hurricane.
But her family business didn't escape the storms unscathed. Appa's sister, Lisa Burmaster, helps run their main farm down the road from the stand. Burmaster says they lost about a fifth of their pumpkin crop when a field they own 40 miles away was inundated.
We lost a field up in Schenectady that was along the Mohawk River, and those pumpkins are completely useless now. We've got a little bit of damage in the fields here, which everybody does, but for the most part, most of the pumpkins are good.
Burmaster says they were lucky to have a bumper crop down here in Athens. Workers are busy power washing the pumpkins and loading them into bins.
It takes a lot. There's about 20 guys that we have that harvest these pumpkins and bring them down, and they're just working all the time. They're great.
Most of their pumpkins are retailed to local grocery stores. Some go to New York City. Others are sent to national chains like Whole Foods. The rest are sold at their farm stands.
Yesterday, there was about 5,000 pumpkins that went out of here.
But with her losses and shortages elsewhere, Burmaster admits that people will pay about 20% more for her jack-o'-lanterns this Halloween. However, she says there's no need to get spooked about the supply.
Don't do a run on the pumpkins, but do buy your pumpkins. Don't be scared.
For NPR News, I'm Marie Cusick in Athens, New York.
This is NPR News.
In many parts of the country, autumn marks the start of the honey farming season, as beekeepers prepare their hives for the harsh winter months. And as Weekend Edition food commentator Bonnie Wolf has found, beekeeping is increasingly becoming a do-it-yourself adventure.
Beekeepers used to be considered eccentric. Now, people are managing hives in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Brooklyn, New York. They're on top of the Paris Opera House and at the White House. 10 years ago, beekeeping classes across the country averaged 20 to 40 people. Now there are waiting lists and class limits of 200. Beekeeping kits fly off the shelves. People keep bees for the same reason they plant community gardens and keep chickens in their yards. You can't get more local than honey from the back porch. Bees use the colorful scented flowers within about 2 miles of their hive. All beekeepers say their neighborhood honey is the best. Not always. The observation hive at the Smithsonian's Museum of Natural History is on the National Mall in Washington, where the bees are attracted to the sugar water left in Coke cans. Nobody likes Coke-flavored honey. Some people are drawn to beekeeping because they've heard about colony collapse disorder and want to help by starting more hives. 5 years ago, huge numbers of hives were found mysteriously empty. Nobody knows why. Some of the likely suspects are pesticides, disease, habitat change, and stress. We need bees. They pollinate about a third of the world's food supply. Without them, our diet would be based on foods pollinated by the wind, wheat, rice, oats, and the occasional acorn. Another reason people keep bees is that they're really interesting. A healthy hive has about 50,000 honeybees, most of them infertile females who spend their short lives working for the greater good. nectar gathering, hive tending, larvae sitting, your worker bees. A few hundred males, called drones, hang around waiting to mate with the queen, the one fertile female who spends her life laying eggs. After their date, the drone dies. It's no picnic being queen either. After she's laid her last egg, she is ripped to death. Bees have some fun, though. They dance. The round dance in a figure eight called the waggle. These moves tell other bees where to find the good flowers. All this makes beekeeping attractive to kids, a nice family activity with spacesuits. Some people keep bees because it's so zen. Beekeepers use words like meditative, calming, contemplative. Nothing wrong with a little serenity and sweetness in a chaotic world.
Bonnie Wolf is working on a book about the foods of Maryland's Eastern Shore. This is NPR News.
We all know that fatty foods can add inches to your waistline. Now, in Denmark, they'll also lighten your wallet. This weekend, a so-called fat tax went into effect there. The tax charges an extra 16 kroner, or about $3, for every kilogram of saturated fat. Butter, oil, sweets, Danes are paying more for all of them now. The government hopes costlier junk food will lead to better Danish diets and to a bump in tax revenue. For more on the new tax, we're joined by Jacob Sorgenfri Kjær. He's a business reporter for the Danish newspaper Politiken. Jacob, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
How did this tax come to be? Where did the idea come from?
Well, it's been a discussion for some time now. What can you do to basically improve public health? And we've seen before a small increase on some sorts of fats, but this one is by far the most intense tax scheme that we've seen.
You say a response to public health. Is obesity a problem in Denmark?
Not in comparison to other countries. For instance, in the U.S., one-third is suffering from obesity, and in Denmark it's 1 out of 10, so it's not... In comparison to other countries, a big issue. Then again, if you look at the prospects, then it will grow to become a substantial problem.
So give me a sense, say, of the price of a package of butter on Friday versus a package of butter today, now that the tax is in place.
That would be local currency, like 2 crowns, saying pretty much 50 cents. So it doesn't sound like a lot, but then again, I just came back from a local grocery, and it's 800 products right there that needed to change price labels. That's why we've seen that people have been hoarded butter, bacon, milk, cookies, and pre-cooked foods the past month. We've talked to some of the local food producers, saying that, well, they increased their sale by 50-60%. Just in September, because, well, people just basically queued up to get their favorite products at a cheaper price.
So this can add something like 10 to 15% on top of the average grocery bill now in Denmark, right?
Well, if people continue their habits of buying the same products, but then again, the whole concept of this new legislation is that people should change their habits. We have a new center-left government coming into place today, and they started off by saying, well, we're going to continue this focus on public health through taxes. So this is definitely a development that's here to stay.
But I do understand that some crafty Danes are driving over the border to neighboring Sweden and Germany to get their fat tax-free, right?
That's a big issue for the government. They need to look into how can we try to make the Danes live more healthy. But the risk is, of course, that people, they travel 1 hour, 2 hours down to Germany or to Sweden, and then they just buy all their groceries there, and that makes no taxes coming into the Danish government. So you need to balance it, and that's the whole discussion here.
That's Jacob Sorgenfri Kjær. He's a business reporter for the Danish newspaper Politiken, talking about the new so-called fat tax in Denmark. Jacob, thanks.
Sure, anytime.
This is NPR.
It is alarming how obesity is rising in the United States. We know the usual culprits: junk food, too little exercise, you know the drill. But new research suggests there might be another hidden factor: gender. NPR science correspondent Shankar Vedantam joins me to discuss some new insights into human behavior. And Shankar, tell us what you're finding.
So actually what I want to do, David, is I want to conduct a quick experiment on you if I could.
Okay, game.
I'm going to use the magical radio to take you to two restaurants.
Sounds lovely.
Where we have a guy sitting down in the first case with a woman and in the second case with a bunch of his guy friends.
Okay.
Here's what the first restaurant sounds like.
Would you care for a cocktail?
Would you bring me a bottle of your finest champagne, please?
Bien sûr. Very good.
Sounds like sort of a stuffy date.
All right. Now we go on to the second restaurant, and here he's sitting down with a bunch of his guy friends. Maybe they've come back from a ball game or something.
Sure.
Hi. You gentlemen ready to order?
I'll have a sirloin medium, fried onions, baked potato with everything on it, and a beer.
Same.
All right, David. So here's the question. In one case, the guy's sitting with a woman, and the other case, he's sitting with other guys. Where do you think he's going to eat more?
I guess if I'm that guy sitting with the woman getting champagne, I mean, I don't want to just get a salad, but, you know, I don't want to overeat and seem like a pig. So maybe, a nice salmon filet. And if I'm sitting with my guy friends, I mean, it's got to be a burger or two.
Yeah, so that's what I would have guessed as well. But I actually want to show you what some recent research has found. This was just published in the Journal of Applied Social Psychology. The experiment is taking place at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And there's this graduate student, Molly Allen O'Donnell. And she decides she wants to snoop on her fellow students as they're eating and watch how much it is they're eating. She sets up the experiment this way.
I sat in a table close enough that I could see what people were purchasing without really being intrusive.
She's like a spy in a restaurant. I'm going to be looking out for people like her when I sit down to eat from now on.
That's exactly right. So she's spying on people, and she starts seeing all kinds of interesting things. So she looks at a table with four guys, for example, and here's what she sees.
There was this one specific case that I remember. There were four guys eating together, and they all ate salads. And I was just so shocked.
That kind of shocks me, too. I mean, I can't remember a time when I'm sitting with my guy friends, especially after a ball game, eating salad.
Right, so that's the stereotype we have. But Molly finds that when she crunches the numbers, that when both men and women sit down with men, they tend to eat a lot less than when they sit down with women. So both men and women eat a lot more when their dining companions are women, and they eat a lot less when their dining companions are men.
A man or a woman, whoever it is, if you're sitting with a woman, you're eating more food.
That's exactly right. So, you know, the effect of women seems to be that both men and women order more food than they would have otherwise.
I guess I will say, and this is probably going to get me in trouble with my wife, but she was just on a vacation in South America, and I was not eating regular meals. I was eating little bits and pieces, you know, ramen or making a little sandwich. When she came back, I mean, we ate healthy, but we would have regular meals, and I felt sort of self-conscious if we didn't do that. So maybe I have been eating more since she's been back.
You really are going to get in trouble with your wife, David. I'm going to confirm that. But, you know, the truth is that when I got married, I put on a whole bunch of pounds as well. I mean, the bottom line here is, you know, we are responsible for the food we put on our fork and the forks we put in our mouths.
So, Shankar, I mean, we can think about our own experiences, but is there sort of a specific hypothesis for why a guy would be sitting there eating more with a woman compared to another guy, and why a woman would be eating more with a woman than she would be with a guy?
So, I mean, the truth is the researchers don't really know. They have theories about that, and their idea is that when guys are sitting down with women, they're acting out a script of what it means to be masculine. And what it means to be masculine is to be a carnivore, to eat a lot of food.
Eat more, eat meat.
To eat more, yeah. And that women sitting down with men are acting out a script of what it means to be feminine. And that script, at least in our culture right now, is eat less, peck at your food, pretend that you're not really hungry.
But we should hang on. This was just a study of college students. I mean, do we know that the same thing affects adults?
This is college students. These are heterosexuals. These are largely white. It's a small study. So, you know, the bottom line is context seems to matter when we sit down to eat. And the central idea behind the research is that once people become aware that the context they're eating with makes a difference, they can choose to eat what they eat and how much they eat a little bit more deliberately, a little more consciously.
Interesting stuff. Interesting conversation. We'll hope that our marriages both survive it. It's NPR science correspondent Shankar Vedantam. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook @HiddenBrain. That's one word, Hidden Brain. And you can follow us @Morning Edition.